It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, it's our weekly look at the inner workings of Congress with Paul Singer.
But first, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York just released a report indicating that household debt is on the increase. In fact, this would be the third consecutive quarterly increase.
As Americans dig themselves out of the aftermath of the Great Recession, they're apparently borrowing a little more, but not so keen to run up credit cards or commit to new mortgages.
To find out what this means for households and the economy, we have with us Amer Sufi. He's professor of finance at the University of Chicago School of Business and a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. His new book is House of Debt, How They and You Caused the Great Recession and How We Can Prevent It from Happening Again. Amer, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, looking at this report, it gets a little confusing. Overall debt is up, but we consumers are a little reluctant. We're scaling back on our credit cards, things like new mortgages. I want to start with a big picture. When we're looking at household debt as an indicator, is a rise in debt good news or bad news?
Well, it can be either. It really depends on whether the rise in debt is driven by what we would call fundamental economic improvements, higher wages, higher income, higher earning power, basically. And if it's not, if debt is rising the most for people who actually don't have better income growth or better wage growth, then that's kind of not a great thing. That's not a very sustainable way of generating economic activity.
So we've seen this household debt go up a little bit for three quarters in a row. How do you read that? Is this a good increase in debt or a bad increase?
Well, it's driven mostly by two main factors, and that is student debt and auto debt. And in both circumstances, in my view, there are some worrying factors. For example, wage growth among college graduates continues to kind of be depressed, and the unemployment rate facing college graduates continues to be high. So it seems like people are optimistic going into school, willing to take on more debt, yet the actual wages they're going to earn, the wages they're going to need to earn in order to pay back that debt is still pretty, that wage growth is still pretty low. And so you do worry that student debt with this rising burden of it is going to continue to kind of depress economic activity among younger Americans. We're talking home buying, spending. That's the kind of worry I think a lot of people have when they're looking at this rising student debt number. On the auto side, what's interesting is a lot of the auto debt is also being driven by extension of credit to what I would call more marginal borrowers, people with low credit scores, subprime borrowers. In fact, subprime auto loan issuance has increased substantially. And again, I would point out, do we really think wage growth is actually improving among these low credit score, low income individuals? And if not, then again, we worry that eventually they won't be able to pay back this debt. And so it's kind of a short-term boost to economic activity, but it might not be viable in the long run.
So what we'd like to see for economic growth and recovery is people thinking, I've got a better job, I'm more confident that I'm going to keep my job in the future, therefore I'm willing to take out this loan for a car or a home or something. You're worried that with student loans and auto loans in particular, we're not seeing that. We're seeing people maybe being overextended.
That's right. I mean, I don't want to sound the fire alarm, but it does look to me like we are not yet seeing the kind of improvement in the job market, in wages, that would sustain higher levels of debt. The rise in debt over the last three quarters, as you mentioned, it has increased. Now, it hasn't increased substantially. And in fact, the pattern that worries me more is not so much the aggregate increase in household debt, but it is kind of when I look at the micro data and I look at the fact that, especially in the auto loan space, you do see a lot more subprime auto loan issuance. And so you worry, well, what's eventually going to happen when people might not be able to pay back that debt? That obviously means more defaults in that space, but it also means potentially we won't see as many new car sales, which are an important part driving economic growth currently.
Now, when subprime became a household word and maybe a dirty word, it had to do mostly with mortgages. What are we seeing there as far as people's willingness to take on mortgage debt?
That's what's interesting. And the mortgage market seems to be the one anomaly in current loan markets. Even credit card debt issuance, as you mentioned, it has gone down overall. But credit card originations, just people getting a new credit card, whether they're spending on it or not, has been going up for lower credit score individuals as well. So auto loans and credit card loans has been going up for subprime individuals, but mortgage debt continues to be a spot where there's extremely high credit scores among the people who actually are able to successfully get a mortgage. So it seems like lenders in some sense got burned so bad that they're not returning to that space. And so that space is basically still dead. There's basically almost no credit issuance to very low credit score individuals in the mortgage space. It seems instead that lenders have moved to the auto and credit card space in order to kind of extend credit to these low credit score individuals.
So that's coming from the banker's side in the mortgage. It's a matter of bankers saying, we don't want to make risky loans, not people maybe on the margins saying, I can't afford this mortgage right now.
Right. And that's one of the things our research shows pretty definitively and our book, and that is there is a substantial segment of the U.S. population that essentially will borrow if they're given the opportunity to borrow. And that's something that's a bit worrisome. So even if they don't have wage growth, even if they don't have income growth, oftentimes if a creditor is willing to extend them credit, even if they can't handle that increased debt burden, they sometimes will take it. So that's something that you do see right now in the subprime auto space and the credit card space, but I would agree, it's not, in my opinion, people not wanting to get a mortgage because they don't feel like they can actually sustain one. Instead, it seems more coming from the other side, that they're not able to get a mortgage. A lender's not willing to extend them that credit.
Going to the topic of your book and the big picture here, I think a lot of people are looking at all this and saying, it's fine as long as you don't go back to what happened in 2008. Have we as individuals, have lending institutions, the government for that matter, learned lessons from 2008 to where we're going to avoid that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that it's unlikely that we're going to see the kind of rapid increase in household debt that we saw from 2000 to 2007. To be frank, that was an unprecedented rise in household debt that you'd have to go all the way back to prior to the Great Depression to see that kind of rise in household debt. Although I will say one of the things that we're trying to push in this book is just the notion that debt itself is a very dangerous instrument, even if it's not used in a huge amount of quantity, because of the way it distributes the losses from an economic crash. And that is, the indebted, who tend to be poorer individuals, lower net worth individuals, they basically take the first hit when they have a lot of debt. And that's something that we argue we need to kind of rethink the financial system in order to get rid of such harsh debt contracts that impose these losses on the people who are least able to actually handle them.
So is the answer there making debt less accessible to people in that situation or making it more affordable and less risky?
It could be either. So, for example, there's been a big rise in people renting homes. Renting homes, in our view, is a good thing. It's basically saying to people, look, you might as well take whatever extra cash you have, maybe put it in assets like the stock market or bonds or even deposits in a bank. That, in some sense, is a less risky bet than sometimes putting it into a home with a mortgage, because the analysis we always give is, if you have a $100,000 home, if you have an $80,000 mortgage, so you have $20,000 of equity, if your home goes down $20,000, you take that loss. You lose 100% of your investment before the lender takes any loss at all. And that's the notion by which we mean debt is a very harsh instrument. And so we kind of advocate either people renting or having debt contracts that are more flexible. Suppose you have a debt contract where the principal balance actually went down if house prices fell in your neighborhood. Those are the kinds of ideas we basically talk about in the book.
As we wrap up for now, this is one indicator among many, this report from the Federal Reserve of New York. What do you have your eyes on? What are you watching for next?
Well, I definitely look a lot at what's going on among the more marginal borrower population. People who basically are still very much struggling in the aftermath of the Great Recession, still seeing very low wage growth. This is related, of course, to the increase in inequality that we've seen over the past couple of decades. And I'm watching this segment of the population to see, are they getting better wages? Are they better getting better income? Or are they fueling aggregate spending by just levering up again, getting an auto loan, getting a credit card loan? If it's the latter, if they're just getting more debt to fuel economic activity, then that kind of gives me a worried feeling about the future of the economy, that it might not be as robust as we might even think it is, even though most people think it's pretty weak already.
Amer, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
That was Amer Soufi, professor of finance at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. He's the co-author of the new book, House of Debt.